The observer who goes up in an airplane and looks down on the vast battlefield of northern France and Flanders sees the country below him marked by minute thread-like cracks running here and there into and out of one another, an endless and seemingly confused web. These are the trenches. Tangled though they appear to the unpracticed eye, to the expert observer, their confusion reveals a plan and system. He reads them as an Oriental scholar reads an Arabic script. Over a part of the front where law reigns, the eye of the observer aloft might sweep the country for signs of life and movement in vain. The maze of thread-like cracks looks deserted. The prospect seems a dissolute solitude of ruined towns, roofless remains of villages, shot-torn woods, and fields full of emptiness. Meanwhile, on another part of the front, the battle rages. There, the flash of artillery is insistent. The roar of the guns rises in a hurricane of thunders. Swarms of gray human ants now creep across the ground and now dash forward in rushes. The lines of cracks become lines of flashing fire. That from Edmund Dane, 1915. Our author goes on to say, in the minds of many, it is the bloody Western Front that epitomizes World War I of 1914-18, and the essential character of that archetype is the trench war. Our common vision is that of Tommy, Fritz, and the French Pelou, eye deep in hell, a chaotic misery of mud, blood, and bigoted irrational stupidity, unenlightened by any strategic or tactical reason, and for whom the trench carried an almost demonic overtone as the prime author of their suffering. Yet hindsight and pity are wonderful things. In reality, trenches were designed to and did save lives. That's from the opening of Stephen Bull's Trench, The History of Trench Warfare on the Western Front. It's an important book, important because 100 years ago, on the 11th hour, on the 11th day of the 11th month, World War I, from 1914 to 1918, came to an end. Trench warfare, which was such a major part of that war, came to an end as well. And while Trench is certainly not the most scintillating writing I've read before, it does, as a reviewer noted, look at the horrors of World War I and the wonder of the technology of trench warfare well. Trenches built in the midst of World War I most likely saved many, many, maybe millions of soldiers from death or physical trauma. The trenches could save any military from the horrors of PTSD as another matter, and while it was defined as shell shock in its day, such psychological trauma of World War I is noted and researched in this book. Two, the book does a very good job of explaining to readers the lives lived by soldiers who dwelt in the wartime trenches on the Allied and the Axis side. Both are noted with detail, with sympathy, and sometimes even with irony. Quoting from two Germans who recorded two battles in 1915, our author writes this. Dense masses of the enemy, line after line, appeared over the ridge of the trench. Some of their officers mounted on horseback and advancing as if to carry out a field day drill in peacetime. Artillery and machine guns riddled their ranks as they came on. As they crossed the northern front, the machine guns there caught them in the flank and whole battalions were annihilated. The English made five consecutive efforts to press on past the wood and reach the second line position. Never had the machine gunners such straightforward work to do or done it so effectively. They traversed to and fro along the enemy's ranks unceasingly. The men stood on the fire steps, some even on the parapets, and fired triumphantly into the mass of men advancing across open grassland. As the entire field of fire was covered with the enemy's infantry, the effect was devastating, and they could be seen falling literally in hundreds. In another letter from October of 1915. The attack was terribly beautiful, the most beautiful and at the same time the most terrible thing I have ever experienced. Our artillery shot magnificently, and after 2 hours the position was sufficiently prepared for the German infantry. The storm came, as only German infantry can storm. It was magnificent the way our men, especially the youngest, advanced. Magnificent. Officers belonging to other regiments who were looking on have since admitted that they had never seen anything like it. In the face of appalling machine gun fire, they went on with a confidence which nobody can ever attempt to equal. And so the hill, which had been stormed in vain three times, was taken in an hour. But now comes the worst part, to hold the hill. Bad, very bad days are in front of us. One can scarcely hope to get through safe and sound. The French guns are shooting appallingly, and every night there are counterattacks and bombing raids. Where I am, we are only about 20 yards apart. World War I was, for all its verve at its opening, a war that lasted for years, not from poor tactics as much as from the inability of those in power to understand how to both use and to defend themselves from the new technologies of trench warfare, and the many military innovations that found wide acceptance as the war dragged on. World War I saw a wealth of new technology introduced for the purpose of killing enemy soldiers, and they are all covered here. Much improved artillery, which threw deadly charges many hundreds of yards further than in any previous war. The advent of the warplane, which is noted but not much covered in this book, which focuses its attention on the land war. Tanks, guns on wheels that could maneuver across large swaths of territory and deliver deadly munitions against enemy soldiers with little fear of retaliation. The advent of the tossed grenade, a weapon of war, Bull notes, that dates back to the European Middle Ages, but came of age as a worthy means by which even solitary enemy soldiers could rain deathly surprise upon troops sheltering in a trench, and a means of war which would become a mainstay of World War II movies. And the evil introduction of poison gas as a battlefield weapon and tactic, a blight the world still grapples to respond to. They're all here in the text and the fascinating pictures. To its credit, Trench tells at least some of these true-life horror tales with excerpts from letters or diaries of both Allied and Axis soldiers. These letters give the otherwise often turgid text a refreshing zing, if only in the service of dreadful and fearful events and lives. Those letters that I read before, which come from German soldiers, are good examples. There are letters here as well from French, British, and even a few from American soldiers. That said, Trench has a definite British slant to it, in word use especially, but it's worth noting that the British, the French, the Germans, the Austro-Hungarians, the Commonwealth troops, those troops most involved in the Western Front until the summer of 1917, when the Yanks joined on the side of the Allies and ended the war surprisingly quickly with their influx of troops, turning the tide to the side of the British, the French, the Allies. As I alluded to before, I found the text rather ponderous, written more as a term paper than as a warm attempt at a bestseller. And other reviewers have said much the same. Quote, "This is undoubtedly a scholarly, well-researched book, but it is laid out and edited like a college textbook or an introductory book intended for young adults. Not a knock on it, I guess," the reviewer goes on. "The pictures were very well chosen, but it just had an unusual feel to it." Other reviewers have been much kinder to the overall presentation of Trench, making such statements as, quote, "I enjoyed reading it, absolutely. It was well-written, engrossing, an explanation of the realities of trench warfare with a style that was matter-of-fact, but not clinical." And, quote, "The audience for this book is not clear. It seems to fall between a textbook and a popular history book, but it is an interesting examination of the life in the trenches," end quote. Which leads me to this moment of praise for the book. The real reason to delve into trenches, not for the text as much as it is for the illustrations. The maps of the trenches and war-torn areas, the photos of the soldiers in their trenches or behind their new battle guns. A feature of World War I was the introduction of planes, machine guns, much longer throw artillery pieces, as I mentioned earlier. Many of these photos are perhaps staged, but staged in real time, real place, real mud. And though the photos are by necessity black and white, they certainly do show the pride these soldiers took in their equipment, in their unit. And they also show as well the filth, the mess, the grossly upsetting conditions that war, and especially trench warfare, with its semi-permanent sense of battle living built in, brought to troops serving on the not-so-often-to-move front. It's difficult to read illustrations for you, but I do want to read the captions of a couple, which I think will give you an idea of why I found these illustrations so important to making the book a real reason to read. There's one early on that talks about spades, and I'm not talking about cards, I'm talking about the garden utensil that many of us are familiar with. Here's what the author tells us in describing this particular illustration. Cover of the privately produced German manual, The Spade War. Like unofficial British manuals, this drew heavily upon official sources, in this case, a field guide from 1911. The spade was the prime defensive weapon in modern war, it said, for the construction of trenches and shrapnel-proof dugouts. In short, sweat saves blood. Yet the author also saw the spade as a preserver of health in cleaning up latrines and dead animals, and useful in even the attack. And then there's this illustration, which was taken at that special event in 1914, as the description of this really arresting photo tells us. British and German soldiers on the 11th Brigade front fraternizing on Christmas Day during the unofficial but widespread truce of 1914. The bearded, smoking German right wears the spiked Pickelhaube with cover and the early regulation greatcoat with colored collar patches. Several men have soft caps, scarves, or pullovers against the winter weather. It's one of the most arresting photos in this book. That special moment in 1914 when so much of the front ceased to battle and came together, both Allies and Axis troops, to celebrate the holiday of Christmas. In sum, I think if Trenches had been produced as a coffee table book with these and more illustrations and minimal text, I would recommend it much more robustly. I would recommend it highly. Yet for all my complaints about the text, the illustrations in this text truly bring the horrors and the surprises of World War I into focus. In the final pages, titled simply The Conclusion, we read these tart and smartly written words that wrap up the book's previous chapters succinctly, and this time with moving prose. Our author concludes, "All wars end. Even this war will someday end. And the ruins will be rebuilt, and the field full of death will grow food, and all this frontier of trouble will be forgotten. When the trenches are filled in, and the plow has gone over them, the ground will not long keep the look of war. One summer with its flowers will cover most of the ruin that man can make. And then these places, from which the driving back of the enemy began, will be hard to trace, even with maps." That from John Masefield, 1917, concludes Stephen Bull's Trench, a history of trench warfare on the Western Front. It's quite an amazing look at World War I, the war to end all wars that ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.